We come now to chapter 16 of the story. We are looking at this idea of the beginning of the end. It's a difficult subject. In fact, if I could have planned it differently, I wouldn't have us at such a dark time in the story of God's work and his salvation throughout the world at a time when it is so dark and so uncertain in our world today. But even in the midst of this, one of the darkest chapters in the history of God's people, one of the saddest chapters in the time of God striving after the heart of his people, even in this dark chapter, there is still hope. Perhaps that's why the God you and I trust in tells us in Psalm 23 that even though I walk through the deepest valley, the darkest valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. It's that sentiment of God being with us, of God not forgetting us when we go through our certainties. It's that sentiment that we'll land on as our dominant note of hope in today's message. I also want to celebrate something else with you before we really dig in, and that is now that we've reached chapter 32, we've reached the halfway point of the story. We've come halfway through. We're about to begin the second half. We're about to begin the half of the story you and I are probably most familiar with, the one that involves Jesus. But we've made it through so much of Old Testament times. We've seen God be faithful over and over again. And a reminder, going back a few chapters ago, this period of kings and kings being unfaithful and God rejecting unfaithful kings and the unfaithful people of God, this chapter got started some chapters ago when the people of God said, "We want to have an earthly king like all the other nations." Imagine if we in the United States had a king instead of a president. That'd be interesting. Do you know that during Revolutionary War times, there were those who approached George Washington and asked him to be king, wanted to set up our form of government to have a king? In his wisdom, George Washington said no, and perhaps he was reflective of an attitude that was in the hearts of many of the colonists at that time. In fact, when a governor from Massachusetts was reporting back to King George III in England in 1774, he wrote this: "If you ask an American who his master is, he will tell you he has none, nor any governor but Jesus Christ." That sentiment, that hope, that centering our lives around Jesus Christ is the safest, strongest place where any of us can live. It was the design and the hope that God has had ever since the Garden of Eden, where he wanted his people to choose to respond to his love with their own love and a love relationship. Not a forced relationship, not a compelled, "I am your king and thus saith me" relationship, but a, "because you have loved me so much, O God, I love you and trust you as my king, as my Lord, as my friend, as my God." That is what God has always hoped for. That is the saying, and perhaps there was a saying, it was used, I think it's saying, a saying from the Revolutionary War times that's worth us remembering: no king but King Jesus. You know, in this time, I think that God's people could use a motto like that. No king but God as king. We saw the Israelites reject God as king, and we saw what happened. Earthly kings, divisions of kingdoms. Now one strong nation that had been there under David and under Solomon has become two weaker nations. And the northern one, Israel, has been drifting very hard to the left away from God. 38 kings in all. And of those 38, only five were good. 33 evil kings spoken to by 9 prophets in that northern kingdom over a span of 208 years. And no change of heart, no return back to the Lord as king. So those 10 tribes are lost to history. We even call them the lost tribes of Israel. They're gone. The northern kingdom of Israel fell to the Assyrians in 722, and they had been warned of this. They had been warned of it over and over. As 2 Kings 17, verse 13 says, there were no good kings in Israel. But 9 prophets had tried. God had tried through those 9 prophets to bring the heart of people and the heart of the king back to himself. It had not worked. They had not listened to his love and his love-filled warning, and they were lost. The 10 tribes were conquered and gone, and as 2 Kings 17, verse 18 tells us, God removed them from his presence. We hear that in maybe Old Testament language, and we think, oh, wow, poor them. That couldn't happen to us. But I remind all of us, or I remind myself, I lovingly, in God's name, remind you that Jesus said, it's possible for us. We look at Matthew 7, verse 7, and there Jesus says, many will say to me, Lord, Lord, didn't we prophesy in your name? And didn't we do miracles in your name? And I will say, away from me, depart from me, out of my presence with you, for I don't know you. God has always been looking for that heart-led, loving relationship. We want independence. We talked about this a few weeks ago in our Independence Day message. We want that independence. And yet when we're independent from God, when we don't see him as king, we are so at risk. We are so weak. We are so vulnerable to all of the ways that we can fall into sin, into fear, into self-sufficiency and self-delusion. But when we are in dependence on God, in that love-filled relationship with him, how much safer and stronger we are. God wanted that for his people. And in particular, we see how he tried through the southern kingdom to save Judah. Judah, that southern kingdom, ruled by kings both bad and good. But we highlight in today's chapter a couple of the good ones. Hezekiah was a good king. This good king who put his trust in God. He was a king after the heart of his father David. That's an interesting note there in the text. Not of his immediately earthly descendant father, but of his spiritual father, David. Can you and I have a heart after our spiritual shepherd and king, Jesus himself? Like Hezekiah, can we trust in Almighty God in all circumstances? Hezekiah trusted in God, and we get to see him defeating the Assyrian king who conquered the northern kingdom. Israel wiped out by a king, but now God as king wiping out that Assyrian king on behalf of his southern tribe of Judah, on behalf of King Hezekiah, on behalf of those who with their hearts trusted him. May we get to see the same. God destroys that army in 2 Kings chapter 19 at verse 35 and 37, 186 destroyed in a night. And yet the very next king, Manasseh, the son of Hezekiah, does more evil in the sight of the Lord than in all the others. 2 Kings chapter 21 records this. And the Isaiah, the prophet, who had come to Manasseh, who had also brought comfort before to his father Hezekiah, Isaiah comes to Manasseh and warns him that God will use the Babylonians as his tool of judgment. We read this in the story in Isaiah chapter 3. And Judah is being warned of not only exile, but in given the hope that there will be a return. Why is that? Why not just let Judah be lost, like the lost tribes of Israel, the northern 10 tribes? Here's a very important point for us to get. God who has to bring the logical and natural consequences for sin and sinful independence from himself on his people also has to keep his promise. And God had promised to bring about the Messiah for the world and for the Jewish people through the true tribe of Judah. So how does he accomplish that? He does it by, yes, bringing the punishment and judgment, but by, in his mercy, still keeping his promise, still showing grace, though it wasn't deserved. That's what makes it amazing, isn't it? When you and I receive God's grace that we do not deserve, and how amazing it is, that love which changes our hearts enables us to have a changed heart towards other people. And God kept his promise. Judah would not be disappointed. In trying to describe that promise, in trying to talk about what it would be like, today's Old Testament reading records a section from Isaiah. And it's from chapter 53, one very familiar to us that we often read as a part of our Good Friday readings. It's sometimes called the Suffering Servant chapter. For there, 700 years before Jesus is born, Isaiah is given a vision. He gets to peer over the curve of the time horizon and see what it will be like when God walks this earth as king. When God comes as a suffering servant king to give his life for his people. Like a sheep before her shearers is silent, so he did not open his mouth. As he is beaten, as he is whipped, he does not answer for himself or defend himself, for God has laid on him the iniquity of us all. And by his stripes we are healed. God is telling us through the prophet Isaiah, God's trying to tell the king Manasseh, he's trying to tell the tribe of Judah, he's trying to tell you and me, be on the lookout for a king who's willing to serve, for a king who is willing to suffer, for a king who is willing to die for his subjects so that they might live and live forever. Scour all of human history that you want. You will not find an earthly king who was ever willing to do that. But the heavenly king, Jesus Christ, who came down to this earth, who walked this earth, born as that babe, hidden in the manger, rushed off into Egypt away from the murderous troops of Herod, brought back to feed the 5,000, to heal the lepers, to comfort the widows, to speak words of teaching and hope and guidance and grace. That suffering servant king who washed his disciples' feet died on a cross to wash away the sin in your heart and in mine, that we might be free and might freely choose him as our king and Lord. When Nathanael met Jesus and was so overwhelmed by his ability to know something about him before he even met him, Nathanael said, "You are the Son of God. You are the King of Israel." This is the response God hopes for from all of us. That experiencing his goodness, experiencing that he knows everything about us and yet still loves us, experiencing that he would be the one who was willing to die for us, go and suffer death and hell and rise again for us. That this Jesus, whom angels had served before and are serving even now, that this Jesus is longing for you and me to say from our hearts, "You are the Son of God, you are the King of Israel, and you are the King of me." What would that look like? I'm not quite sure what it would be if our presidents here were turned into our kings, but we have somewhat of an idea of what it might look like if Jesus was King of your life and mine. If we weren't bound by our fears, if we were not led almost like zombie slaves by our sinful self-centeredness, if instead the love of God truly penetrated our heart, our mind, truly touched us so that the way we thought the way we felt, the way we speak, and the way we act would be to honor the King of our heart, King Jesus. Our lives would be so different. And your life, stacked with my life, stacked with thousands and millions of Christian lives, would make this country look so different. Not divided, not talking about Republican or Democrat or independent or any other category, except that King Jesus is our King. And His love is our rallying cry. And His love is also our call to action, to demonstrate and duplicate that same love by the power of the Spirit He gives us. How it might look, whether we choose this day and every day to live as if Jesus is King, does not change the reality that He is. What it does mean is that if we choose not to acknowledge the reality of Him as King, we will still one day have to answer Him. Philippians chapter 2 puts it this way, that one day every knee will bow and every tongue will confess that Jesus Christ is King and Lord to the glory of God the Father. One day Jesus will have all of us stand before Him and He will separate as if a shepherd is separating the sheep from the goats. And to those who have loved and known and responded to Him and followed Him as King, He will say, come to Me. Come and inherit your master's happiness. Come and rejoice, for the kingdom of heaven is truly yours for all eternity. But for those who wanted to live life independently, for those who wanted perhaps to have Jesus as King in name only, but not in action, not in our true heart action and response in how we live our lives, Jesus will say, depart from Me. Depart from the presence of the King and into everlasting darkness, where there will be weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth. You know what that means in modern language, not just Bible language? It means, I knew better. I knew Him, and I knew He was King. And I chose to live as if I was on the throne. Friend, your life, my life, will look very much different when we choose moment by moment, day by day, pandemic by next bad experience, every single moment of it, choosing Jesus as King, declaring Him the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords, and placing Him in the throne of our hearts. Because He had us in mind when He suffered upon the cross. Let the love of your King change your heart, actually free it. Let the love of your King come in and lift your soul and fill you with joy. Let the love of your King guide you in how to be a loving representative of the King to your family, your workplace and neighborhood, everywhere we go. And let the love of our King shine through our loving actions and bring glory to the King who laid down His glory for us. May it happen each and every day in your life and in mine. Amen.